All right, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Buffalo Bills Maybe Next Year, the only podcast that goes out and signs one of its hosts to a massive off-season contract, and then watches him say three words during the next podcast. My name is Scott.
I'm Paul.
And that's Frank
Frank.
not saying anything as he enjoys the many millions of dollars he's making for this podcast this year, but decides to not show up today. So,
Not the only one. Not
the
the
only
only
one.
one, yeah.
But anyway, Frank, could you join us for just a little while, just for this game? Maybe you could talk about with us.
Yes, okay.
All right, that's
Those
two.
are my three words for the week, gang. See you later.
Wait, is okay one? All right, this is a hot dog sandwich question. I don't want to go down the road of whether okay is one or two. Okay, so the Bills lost 13-7, which is
An actual score of an actual football game, interestingly enough.
Yeah,
Which
I
is
think hot garbage is what you.
which is yeah, hot garbage and a little frustrating as the Ravens attempted to give the game away multiple times. At least if you're listening to the Baltimore radio announcers, they were pretty much ready to write this game off from the Ravens in the third quarter after the Bills scored their first touchdown, first and only touchdown at the end of the second quarter. But very quickly it became apparent that the Bills were not up to the task of taking the game from the Ravens. Joe Flacco obviously did not have a house on, you know, a great day. With 258 yards passing, but he also did not lose the game, and he did a workmanlike job of getting the Ravens 13 points with two field goals and a touchdown that was a fairly well-thrown ball with Duke Williams technically in coverage, but actually just kind of running and flailing at Mike Wallace. So I have a couple of questions, but why don't we just start with like initial thoughts, and we'll start with initial thoughts from Frank. Who will exceed his word allotment now.
Yeah, it was. It's funny that you said that about the Ravens because I think that there was a sense from watching the television broadcast. We didn't really listen to WGR very much, but we were watching Spiro and Solomon. There was definitely a sense that Solomon Wilcots was a big Ravens fan. But the sense
Which the
that.
Bills did nothing to dissuade him from doing.
Correct. Like, there was no reason to suddenly start rooting for the Bills at all. But I think that the sense that I had was that the Ravens weren't all that impressive. They weren't. I think that if I felt at all like the Bills were remotely competent, by the beginning of the fourth quarter, I had pretty much resolved this game wasn't going to, other than by some miracle, wasn't going to end the way I wanted it to. And that's sad when you're down 6 points and you've limited the other team to one touchdown and really two, you know, obviously two field goals. It was pathetic, but you just could tell that the Bills weren't going to throw the football. And it was so infuriating. And I think you hit the nail on the head with your intro that we paid millions of dollars for this quarterback who then didn't throw the football. Paul's going to say, I'm sure he's correct, that he was at least looking down the field for something, but it's insane to me that the lessons of last year weren't learned, that this is something that the team kind of excelled at, that when we threw the ball deep, good things happened, that Sammy Watkins can make plays. We went and got Sammy Watkins, you know, and it took 2 years of draft picks to get him, and we don't use him. It's the equivalent of buying a Ferrari and leaving it in your garage. It was just incredibly frustrating to watch them not even really, it felt like not even try to win. I'm sure they thought they were trying to win and this was the game plan, but it was pathetic. It was really pathetic that that was the best that they could come up with. And by the third or fourth time you're handing off to Reggie Bush, I don't know what you're expecting other than for him to lose 6 yards, because that's all he did all day was get crushed in the backfield because he thinks
Three carries for -4 yards.
He's awful. He's so fucking bad.
I didn't realize
Yeah, I'm
he had
sorry for
that many
swearing this early in the
yards.
podcast. Go
I
ahead,
didn't realize
Paul.
he
I'm
had that
sorry. You
many
should
yards.
say
He had
something.
-4.
Right.
Crazy.
I would have bet the under on -4 yards.
But he
I
did
think
have
Paul should go.
zero catches and 0 yards on one target. So he didn't lose us any yards in the receiving game. So there is that.
Yeah, he just wasted our time. The whole thing, that's it. This game to me felt like a waste of time. Like, a complete waste of time. Why did I show up? Where was the offense? All the people were there. There wasn't like we had all these like hits to the offense this offseason that we lost all these like huge offensive keys. No, we got everybody back, and everybody was there pretty much. So what the fuck? Pardon my language. This is going to be a swearing cast. I'm sorry.
Swear cast.
Get your NC-17 goggles on, people.
Yes.
Paul, initial thoughts.
Yeah, similar to Frank's. You look at, let's go to all sides of the ball. You know, on defense, we did not really expect much. We talked about the injuries, the departures, the suspension, and really everything that played into that. And yet the defense today, and who knows, maybe the Ravens will be proven to be the Ravens 2000 offense that did nothing, was dependent on a defense to win a Super Bowl. But I thought the defense just did a great job of stepping up. They gave up one big play when they tried to rush Flacco, couldn't get to him. Duke Williams was in a bad matchup. He also has the speed of your mother. I'm referring to anyone right now, unless your mother is Jackie Joyner Kersee, in which case he's not that fast. You know, he just doesn't – the guy wasn't moving very well. But aside from that one play, I don't mean to focus on the negative, because they dialed up a lot of exotic pressures. I think they sacked him at least four times, right? And they had a lot of pressures and hurries on Flacco. And, you know, they did a good job containing the Ravens' run game. It really was not – they never broke one free. So defensively, wow, you know, I was pleasantly surprised with this. On the offense, as Frank mentioned, the thing that, you know, everyone is going to be talking about for the next few days here is, you know, where were those downfield attempts? And Frank mentioned, I said, yeah, he did look downfield. He was making the – he was given looks. But there comes a time when you just have to be like, screw it. You know, this is a sideline pass. I'll throw it to the edge of the sideline. So either Sammy catches this or they fall out of bounds together and the throw sails wide. Hey, maybe we draw a pass interference or at least an illegal contact, something to try and move the chains, because they, except for that one drive, when honestly after that drive, I thought, okay, it took them a half to warm up. They're finally doing it, right? Just like they did last year against Tennessee and Jacksonville, where they slept through much of the game, then woke up and played offense. They never woke up. They never made those plays. And I think the Cordy Glenn injury had something to do with that, with Kwanjo in there, but they weren't moving the ball with Glenn in there until that one drive. So it's not like that made that huge a difference. You know, all in all, it was, you know, a really disappointing effort by the offense when we thought they would go downfield. Special teams, you know, we shouldn't avoid talking about them. I think it was a mixed bag. Everyone's going to focus on the Carpenter missed field goal. Ultimately, that did not cost the team. And again, it was a 49-yard field goal, not a chip shot. There was some wind. It sounds like I'm making an excuse for him. I'm just noting that's not automatic. Special, the kick coverage was great. The punt coverage was good. The punt return game, it was fairly good as well. Brandon Tate had a good return from his 8 and brought out nearly to the 30. So, and the punting, Colton Schmidt, I think, pinned 2 or 3 inside the 10, only had one touchback. So special teams was fine, but it's tough to, you know, look at this game and not look at the offensive performance and think about what we were all expecting and why we all picked the Bills in this game and not be disappointed by it.
Just you think about the two big passes that the Ravens had. One was a sideline throw where Stephon Gilmore had perfect coverage and it landed in the guy's hands. Like, it was a take-a-chance throw. And the other one was the touchdown, which, again, was like, just like, we're going to throw – he was open, but – It was still like they took a chance by throwing it down the field. And that's the difference in the football game. I don't think the Ravens are a better football team than the Bills. I think they were both terrible today. I think the difference was the Ravens took a couple chances and tried to win a football game, and the Bills spent 2/3 to 3/4 of it trying not to lose a football game. The penalties really, like, 9 for 90, that's not great. They didn't cost the Bills anything other than 2 minutes at the end of the game, which – if they were going to do the same damn thing they've been doing for the first 58 minutes, then what were they going to do in those last 2 minutes?
Yeah, I said that to you earlier, Fred. It's like, it wasn't one of those games where I thought, like, oh, if they just had more time, I wasn't comfortable.
No.
You play that game for 120 minutes, they're going to score again.
Right. They were never going to do it. They were never going to fucking pull the trigger on anything. And so, you know, that's what's just upsetting, because if that's the case, then what – here we go. what hope is there that they're ever going to change that? Like, they have the offensive weapons. They do. And if they're not going to use them and they're going to insist on this, you know, garbage, you know, throwing in the flats and, you know, expecting LeSean McCoy to break 10 tackles and having Sammy Watkins coming back towards the line of scrimmage every time he's making a catch, well, then, you know what? Then you're going to finish 8-8, 7-9 for the rest of your life, and who cares? And just burn the whole thing down. I don't care.
Screw it all. Yeah, you don't normally, of all the comparisons we've heard with Tyrod Taylor, we never heard one, and that was Trent Edwards, and that's been all over social media today because what was with those, that was never a Tyrod trade. He was always not there today.
Lieutenant checkdown. Let's hope we can avoid.
Well, they said on the post game, we were listening on the post game a little, and they mentioned that they were the leader in the NFL for completions where the ball was in the air for more than 20 yards.
Yep.
Right, like he threw.
which might be why Tyrod was trying to throw every ball 20 yards, even when the receiver was 40 yards,
like
4
yards away. Right.
Yeah. It's just I mean, it's like it could be. I've never. He's not the most accurate quarterback on those intermediate passes, but I thought, what are you doing? What am I missing here?
Oh. The only real hope is that there's some sort of jitters or not jitters, but like it was a bad day and that's not really their game plan. So
that leads me to my next question, which is how much do you guys put, and I listen to the game, but people will wonder why I'm not talking more. I don't care. No. No, I listened to the game, so while I have a general understanding of how it went, I don't have quite the breakdown analysis. But my question for you guys is, and we'll start with Paul this time, is how much of this do you think is one game and the numerous explanations that could be applied to that one game? We didn't play our starters enough in the preseason, so they're a little rusty. It's the first game of the year anyway, and they're a little rusty. Sammy was kind of out for the first 2 weeks of training camp, and so he didn't have enough time to work in. Maybe the Ravens are actually really good on defense, and we won't know till the end of the year. And therefore, we don't have that much to worry about because it's just kind of a one-game thing. Or do you think like this is about what this is now your expectation of what the offense is going to produce week in and week out, kind of? So, Paul, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's everything that you laid out there immediately, honestly, which makes me, happy. I would gauge this as 6.25% of the football season, and which it is percentage-wise. And everything you noted there is true. It could have been Tyrod jitters coming back. The first game is often I was talking to Frank about this one earlier. Look at that Patriots-Bills 2003 season opener. The Bills won it 31-0. At the time, no one thought it was an upset. Maybe surprising that the Bills won it by that much, but not an upset. When the Patriots proceeded to finish 14-2 and the Bills 6-10, looks like a pretty big upset in hindsight. So that was a crazy first week happening. I remember the Saints after Katrina in 2005. They won their opener in shocking fashion. I remember Mike Ditka the next day on ESPN saying, this could be a surprise playoff team, and I think they finished 4-12. Mm-hmm. So, the first week, never a good gauge to make conclusions about. I will say, just so people don't think I'm making excuses and being like, the sky's not falling, is the latter half of what you said could be true as well. This could be the standard. This could be the expectation. If the offense doesn't get it together quickly, then it's not going to matter because after Thursday's game, it's not getting any, if you start 0-2 and 0-1 in your division and 0-2 against the AFC, you are setting yourselves up for a tough path, even if you can put it together. So they don't have much time. They literally don't have much time, less than 100 hours, about 97 hours till they kick off again. So they've got to get this together fast. So as of today, not worried simply because what we saw defied everything we saw last season, and you think there would be development in this offense, but at the same time not giving them a free pass and saying, it's just a one game thing for sure, because we for a while.
Yeah, I guess that's the real answer, but
I'd rather have a dramatic answer though. Real answers are boring.
Well,
what it might have had in accuracy is kind of dull. So this is where you can.
It is interesting if you take it in further context beyond just one game, but go back to last season. I think that's where Frank's concerns lie.
Yeah, I think that the idea is that like you sort of, you know, they all off season, you know, we've expanded the playbook, we've added the plays, we have all these comfortable, you know, we're all comfortable with things now, and you can't point to something external and say there's the reason the Bills couldn't do this was because of X. The only thing you can point to is, I guess, the Ravens defense. But, I mean, come on. Like, that doesn't prevent you from trying. That doesn't prevent you from, like, heaving the ball down the field a couple times when nothing else is working and seeing if you can break the game open. You know, maybe Reggie Bush would have not had negative 4 yards if they didn't have to, if they just didn't feel completely confident they could flood the, you know, the line of scrimmage. I think that the concern is, the thing of last year is the double-edged sword where, like, that was the concern was, like, well, can we take the next step forward? But if you don't give them that opportunity, then we'll never know, like, if they could have taken that next step forward. The other thing is, though, that if they led the league in, you know, pass attempts or pass completions with 20 yards in the air, then at some point they did start doing that, and maybe that's your silver lining here, that it's just a matter of you've got to get to some point in the season where they start doing that. But, you know, if the rumors and whatnot are true that, you know, Ryan is sort of partial to wanting to win a certain way and running the football and ground and pound, and then you basically wasted everybody's time with a lot of this. You really have. And because if he's not going to use the offense and he's not going to join the 21st century, then this is it. Then you're never really going to, you know, produce at the offensive level you're going to need. You're going to have games that are going to work out, and you're going to score 20-something points maybe, because, you know, you're playing against a team that's weak against the run, or there's going to be games where, you know, you're not, you know, Sammy's going to catch a ball and then break it, but they're going to be fewer and farther between than if you actually tried to open up the offense and make it work. And I think the sooner we know whether it works or not is better, but we're not going to know that until they try.
So this is kind of related to my next question, and I was kind of coming into this wondering whether we thought we needed to, for the offense, because again, I think that what Paul and both of you guys said about the defense was true. I mean, sure, the defense could have played a little bit better, but I don't think anyone's going to put this loss on the defense. So we'll get to them. I'm sure they'll find a way to blow this Jets game by 40 points or something, and then we can rail on the defense next week.
I just saw a stat on TV that the to give you an idea of how much of this was on the offense, the 160 yards by the Bills offense was the least yards allowed by the Ravens in 5 years. So yeah, that, exactly. that's on the offense.
And that's my thing. So Frank seems to be of the opinion. Frank, do you want to totally get rid of the run first offense? Are you just saying, like, we should just spread it out and kind of run basketball on grass, kind of, you know, West Coast offense, and just have Tyrod be the point guard and kind of get the ball in and out quickly? Or do you just think that it needs to be that we're just too run focused? Right now we had 24 rushing attempts and 22 passing attempts, which is a little remarkable given that we were behind for almost the entire game.
Yeah, I think they're slavish to like a run balance. Okay. I think that you wouldn't have seen that many passes if they had, you know, been up. I think that's a lot of teams. I think that's unfair to say. But I think they're slavish to the idea that they need to establish run, and I think they do the same kinds of runs. And a lot of those pass attempts are basically screens and shallow things in the flat that, you know, in my mind, don't really count as passes.
They are stretching, like, the defense. You're not stretching the defense.
The very first pass was over the middle to LeSean McCoy, where he instantly, like, was destroyed because it was, you know, thrown not behind or anything, but, like, it was thrown a little soft, but it was also thrown right in the middle of the field, and two linebackers had nothing better to do than to collapse on him. And that's a lot of the Bills' passing game. There's not a lot of challenging cornerbacks. There's not a lot of stretching the field, as you say. There's not a lot of crossing patterns that are 10 or 15 yards down the field that are trying to get. I guess maybe that's because of Tyrod Taylor's inability to throw over the middle. The point is, I don't think that this game plan is successful. So the sooner I know whether we can do a different type of game plan, the sooner I can decide whether we're going to move on. And I think, you know, the damning thing might be is if they don't change how they approach the offense, it might be because they think they can't, and in which case we do have the wrong people in.
Then we do have to blow it up.
We do have to blow it up because you're not going to win if Rex Ryan can't play differently than this, or right. Greg Roman can't play differently than this, then it's not going to work. It hasn't worked for ever. It's not the NFL.
Yeah, we all agree there's enough talent on the offensive side of the ball that they should be getting it done. So that makes you turn to Greg Roman.
I don't understand why Mike Gillisley's and Paul said this after the game. I don't understand why Mike Gillisley's not the second running back. Why is Reggie Bush the second running back who wasn't on a football team, you know, for most of this calendar year?
It gives you the exact same skill set that LeSean McCoy does.
Only diminished. Like
only less, exactly.
Right. Yeah. It's like
a poor man's LeSean McCoy.
It's a poor man's LeSean McCoy at this point. Like, he came in as a kick returner, and now he's got three carries in the backyard and is targeted once, and Gillisley is basically targeted once on one pass play. He doesn't run. The guy broke for three touchdowns last year, I think. He had huge runs last year. He's the only guy that is remotely a straight-ahead runner. So why isn't he taking those snaps when, you know, you need to hit the hole? They showed it on TV. Bush passed up a hole going forward twice on two of those losses because he was trying to bounce it outside because that's who he is, and he can't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. So if I see it again Thursday, there's a problem. There, you know, I guess with the short week, maybe they would, like, have, like, cribbed game plans. But, like, let's say if I see it this week on Thursday, there's a problem because they're going to be 0-2. And then there's a real problem if they go 0-3 with this type of offense because it really means – they don't know how to use the pieces they have. And,
Paul, do you feel like we're too run heavy at this point? Need to
I would agree. I noted I won't belabor the point. I like to pound things into the ground point wise, but I won't spend too much time on this. I did note on Twitter that watching Reggie Bush and Devin Hester was like watching two former thoroughbreds who, you know, long ago got gelded, thinking they could still win races. It was bad to watch them both. But yeah, I mean, how often I'm looking at the stats right now. By the way, Ryan Fitzpatrick outrushed Tyrod Taylor today, and Ryan Fitzpatrick had 14 yards rushing. So that's a very bad sign. But yeah, 24 times, five of those were Tyrod, and at least one of those was a designed run. So we're looking at running 20 times. You're thinking, well, 20 times in a game, that's not much at all. Well, remember, when you're only running the limited number of offensive plays the Bills did, and you're behind late in the game, that's a big chunk that you devoted trying to run a football when, you know, you had – I don't remember many first down pass plays. That's what kind of upset me. It's like I don't want him to pass on first down 75% of the time, but mix it up a bit. I felt like, all right, first down, here comes a running play, and I thought it was way too predictable.
All right, so predictable may be the problem, maybe not. I'm not sure that I would say I'm ready to give up on the run game yet. I thought we actually got away from it a little bit just when it had started to work. It seemed like the one drive that we ended up scoring on was the one in which we ran the ball most effectively. Now, you could say that that was the one that Cordy ended up getting hurt on, and then you could blame it all on that. But given that Kwanjo's one, like, strength is being an enormous guy who can push people, like, that would seem to not affect the run game that much. But nonetheless, for whatever reason, the drive that we scored a touchdown down, we ran the ball pretty well, and I feel like that is, I still think, I don't know if it's, I'm not saying that we need to, definitely I think we needed to throw more, especially in the fourth quarter when we were, the game was kind of running away from us, even though we weren't down by much, we also needed to score with greater urgency, and that sort of suggested greater risk-taking, and that meant more passes, but they didn't do that, and they lost. We will go on now to three stars, and then we will follow it up with this day in Bills history, and then we'll get in the Wayback Machine and look at what happens to the Bills over the last week and a half since we've last joined you. Unless anyone has any final thoughts on the game.
I just want to quickly shout out that they did go for it twice on fourth down, which was excellent in my mind. I wish they had gone for it that third time at the around the 50. I felt like they didn't need to punt there in the fourth quarter, but...
Yeah, no, the fourth calls were interesting because we had, especially after we'd been stopped on third and one right before the touchdown, and it was kind of like we're going right after it again here. But I mean, I think the percentages are in your favor there, and I think that certainly worked out. And, you know, whatever, Carpenter probably would have missed it anyway.
I'll note the thing that didn't happen, which is no ejections off the new personal foul, two personal fouls, and you're out rule. So. Few people flirted with it, obviously. At least four defenders got personal fouls, but no one went to the well twice, which is sad because all in all, just a really dull game. Usually there's at least one play in a game where you're like, oh, look, that player fell over backwards. How funny. Or that player was tripped by a coach on the sideline. Like, there's nothing in this game that I was just like, huh, that was memorable.
Yeah.
I'm going to forget all the details of this game in like a month.
I doubt that. I'm pretty sure Paul will remember this game 6 years from now and be like, wasn't Colton Schmidt the honorable mention from Scott Three Stars? And Paul would be correct, because Colton is the honorable mention for Three Stars.
Rate him higher.
Averages. This is my rule on punters, is that it needs to be like, you can't get into Three Stars until you're into like November or December. You just can't. Like, it's a nice day. You're a professional. There's not a lot of wind. You should be able to do your job somewhat well, and that is doing it. And Colton Schmidt, again, like Paul said, like 2 in probably the 10, 3 in the 20, doing what they wanted him to do in terms of, just booting it out of the end zone on one of them, keeping Hester from being a threat. Now, obviously, whether Hester will ever be a threat again is debatable, but clearly that was the game plan, and Colton executed it. So good for him. So your third star is going to be from the Buffalo Bills, Preston Brown. 8 tackles, 6 solo, and 1 fumble recovery. Good on him for recovering the fumble. Bills, of course, were not able to do anything with it. I would have loved to have given it to another Bills defender, but it's kind of like, who do you really give them to? Like, Darby had a nice game, dropped an easy interception, probably would have been 6. Jerry Hughes, 2 sacks, kind of blew the play on Forsett that could have put him in 3rd and 11 instead of 3rd and 1 with 2 minutes left, in addition to a personal foul. Stephon Gilmore also had a play that was very kind of, Rex called him out for kind of, should have had a better shot at it. And other than that, no one really standing out too much in the Bills defense. So Preston gets it. Your second star is going to be Timmy Jernigan, who, and the first star is Sharice Wright, who, this is kind of a Baltimore defensive kind of second and first stars, because they were the only ones who really played well. I mean, Flacco played okay, but he also didn't. He did basically one play that was well thrown, and other than that, he was kind of consistently under pressure from the Bills and wasn't able to do a lot. None of the Ravens running backs really did much, as we kind of expected, but I think we were all surprised at the effectiveness at the Ravens defense, and again, that's hopefully hopefully that's where the Bills will go from here, in the sense that this Ravens defense might really be good, and therefore we can chalk some of the problems tonight or this afternoon up to that. Jernigan had 2 tackles and 1 sack and 2 QB hits. Sharice Wright had 11 tackles, 3 of which were for loss. So he clearly, Mosley was the guy you're kind of more worried about.
Some of those tackles were without his helmet too, which made Sharice Wright even more impressive. I think at least twice his helmet popped off.
Did not notice that.
Yes, no. The radio probably didn't point it out on the Bills, but twice it was like, hey, why is Sharice not wearing a helmet right now? I think it would be beneficial to him to wear one.
Yeah, if you're playing linebacker, that's usually a good idea. But any than that, any thoughts or concerns about the 3 stars in honorable mention?
No, I approve of them.
Okay.
Other than I wish it went better for the Bills and they were completely different three stars.
They had a first. The Bills played better and therefore won the game and had the 3 stars all to themselves.
Correct.
You know who had 11 tackles today who could have given a star to was Kiko Alonso, but he plays for the Dolphins now. So.
And speaking of former Bills playing the division, and Paul brought him up earlier, Ryan Fitzpatrick, nice game today, outrushed Tyrod Taylor until he throws the back-breaking interception as they're trying to come back at home against Cincinnati, or excuse me, maybe it was on the road against Cincinnati.
No, it was at home. They were at home against Cincinnati.
And looked awfully like last year how Ryan ended his season. So we'll talk more about the Fitz magic on later on in the show when we get to the Jets preview.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But for now, we will go on to this day in Bills history. Paul, I don't want to catch you by surprise. Did we give you enough?
No, I saw it on the agenda. I'm always right. Okay. I kind of slack on the this days in the off season sometimes, and if I find one, I'll go with it. But regular season, you can always find a game to pick out, and I usually research well in advance. This game, I did not need to do too much research in advance because I already knew what I was going to choose before I did. And by the way, it is 7:40 p.m. and we still have an NFL game ongoing right now. It's the Colts and the Lions are still playing. That's
week
a
one
style game.
Week one, you can watch 6 full NFL games as long as you have cable, no matter where you are in the country, because you get to go Thursday, 3 games on Sunday, and then 2 Monday night games. So.
Yep, 2 Monday night games. It's a good week. So Yeah, so of course, when it's September 11th, obviously many of us here in the United States, of course, remember the tragic events back in 2001. Not offsetting that by any means, but one happy event we can all take out as the day it was the three co-hosts here all met, going back to September 11th, 2005, 11 years ago. I strolled into the bar we go to late, shocking. That never happened again after that day.
We didn't know that that was the case, though, at the time. So
I was just some random guy showing up.
Right, you weren't even late. You weren't even late. You were just some guy.
Yeah, that's true. I had no identity at that point.
Yep.
So it was the Houston Texans at the Buffalo Bills, the beginning of the J.P. Losman era. On September 11th of 2005, his first career start, which is, of course, everyone remembers, is a victory. It was a home game for the Bills. It started out very, very slowly. All the scoring was field goals. The Bills drove on the first four possessions deep, had to settle for field goals of 35 yards, 21 yards, 42 yards, and 39 yards from Ryan Lindell. And I believe that was their first four drives or four of the first five drives that they scored. Then David Carr rushed it in for a yard to put the Texans within five. And then at the end of the first half, the first conversation I can ever remember having with Scott was me joking around with him, like, hey, I bet you JP throws this one to the undrafted rookie tight end Jason Peters, and we're like, yeah, maybe. Or he was a tackle that time. Then they made him a tight end later in the year. And of course, now he's a tackle, and of course, 11 years later, he's still a tackle. And I made the joke, and then what happened? He threw it to Jason Peters for a touchdown, for 1 yard. He gives the Bills a 19-7 lead. Second half, there's one Lindell field goal, and that was it. The Bills end up winning this one, 22-7. Probably the first day we all high-fived, first day we all celebrated a touchdown together. Just a generally positive day. Willis McGahee, the leading rusher, 22 carries, 117 yards for the Bills. JP, meh, which describes his Bills career largely, 17 of 28 for 170, a touchdown, no picks. The Bills ran the ball in this game 36 times, which, you know, it's a general sign that you're going to win games. They possessed the ball for 38 minutes. All in all, just a real positive game. Three interceptions, two by Troy Vincent and one by Lawyer Malloy. Dear Lord, none of these people are even alive anymore, hardly. And then a total of...
Yeah, Troy Vincent's the freaking head of the union, isn't he?
Yes, he is. Five sacks by Takeo, one by Takeo Spikes, podcast commenter on our Facebook page, two by Aaron Schobel, one by Kelsey, one by Jabari Greer. So... that was September 11th, 2005. The Bills start the season 1-0, undefeated. Game time was 1:05 p.m. because they did a tribute 4-9-11 at the beginning. My trivia question on this is great because it leaves you guys for the opportunity for multiple answers if you so choose. Now, as is common practice in the sport of football, American football, you start five offensive linemen to help combat the other team's defense and protect your quarterback and open holes for your running backs, etc. This is not a unique or new concept. Name any of the ones who started for the Bills this day. Just go stab in the dark on any of these five people.
Okay.
Well, give me the year again.
2005.
2005. So Mike Williams was still on the team?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with Mike Williams too. Maybe on guard. At that point, maybe giving up on tackle.
Okay.
All right. So we've got
John Fina, of course, Bills Hall of Fame.
Retired in 2001, yeah. So really incredible that he.
One game came out of retirement.
Jason, right, so you just gave us one. Jason Peters. That's stupid.
Well, no, he was a tackle, but he wasn't starting.
Okay,
he was
that's just, right.
He was a guy on the bench.
Langston Walker and the other guy that we totally
overpaid. Derek Dockery.
Derek Dockery.
Later, though.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm going with them.
Paul?
The Scott gets one of the correct answers, Mike Williams, which you also mentioned, Frank. That was the only one I think you guys had a legitimate chance to guess without cheating.
Yeah, I was so, like, I didn't think he was bad, but I don't think he was bad enough that they could have gotten rid of him that quickly.
Scott was half wrong. He was still a right tackle at this point, but he had gone from left tackle to right tackle, and then the brief experiment at right guard. This was his last season.
Demotion to the end of times.
If you had named any of these other four, I would have just...
Wait, I have one more guess.
I was going to say, make sure we have one more guess here.
And I think at center, because that was the one we haven't talked about, was that Bernhard Langer?
Bernhard Langer. Educate me on that, that particular
person. Remember, he was, at that point in 2006, he was mostly on the, PGA senior tour, but he had, he was the guy who won two Masters, in the he won the 85 Masters, and then he won the 93 Masters as well. The German golfer, so I think at that point, he had pretty much retired from golf at that point, but still, again, the Bills were weak at center that league, so he was a waiver wire pickup, and didn't last too long, if I recall.
Yep, he actually finished golfing in 2002 for the most part, though he did in 2007 when the Crown Plaza Invitational Colonial. Actually, no, he was in a tournament there, and that was his last time. He was with the Bills in 06, but they still consider their interior line depth good enough where he was backing up their center at the time, Trey Teague.
Trey Teague.
Who was flagged on his left by the all-star crew of left tackle Mike Gandy and left guard Benny Anderson.
Yeah.
And we talked about right tackle Mike Williams and, of course, Hall of Fame right guard Chris Villarreal.
Chris Villarreal, right.
I know those names.
Yeah, so remember, guys, you go back to that era and think, man, boy, was J.P. Lossman terrible. Remember, that's who he was working behind right there. So we'll cut him some slack. As this day in Bills history, September 11th, 2005.
All right.
Good stuff.
So now it's on to me. I'm kind of watching the Colts do their attempt at the Stanford band play here. They are rapidly running out of space, and they appear to be going backwards. This is not actually how it's supposed to work.
Oh yeah, they've safetied themselves.
yeah.
I have just watched as they've safetied themselves, and it still says 37-35, but I think it's going to be 39-35.
Yeah. Anyway, so we'll move on to we'll call this segment for now. We'll call this This Week in Hindsight. And we'll talk first about Chantrell Henderson, who, as everyone remembers, was struggling with Crohn's disease in the offseason, which is a very painful and very debilitating intestinal condition, which for him required, the symptoms can vary, but for him, I know, required, I think, some of his intestine being removed surgically, a lot of weight loss. He has struggled to make it back into the season, to get back into playing weight. He had shown up at camp with like a week or two left to go, and Rex said he looked good, but he is now serving a 4-game suspension because he was violating the league's substance abuse policy, which has a zero tolerance for medical marijuana. And there were reports that indicated his positive test was related to his medical condition. And so he is serving that suspension now. He was debating whether to appeal, but I think they've decided that he will just take it on the chin now and kind of serve his 4-game suspension now and not wait until later in the season to have the ball fall on the Bills, potentially when they're in much more significant place. Obviously, for the Bills, you could argue that perhaps in hindsight, it would have been better to have Chantrell Henderson active on the team, given we don't know how Cordy Glenn's going to turn out, but obviously we couldn't know that at the time. Right. But I think the point, nonetheless, serves to then kind of go back to the NFL's marijuana policy and whether things like medical marijuana should be legal, whether Chantrell Henderson should do it if it makes him feel good and makes his quality of life go better, even if he knows there is a risk to his team that he will be suspended. So I will start with Frank on this one.
Yeah, I want to read and I just lost it. Damn it, I'm an idiot. His agent put out a statement that I think is worth looking at. It's just lost now, that's all. I'm going to find it as I vamp.
So, Paul, why don't you just go ahead?
No, I got it.
Oh, you got it.
It's just got a load. Okay. The Brian Fetner said, merciful or not, there is no medical exception that the NFL will accept. It doesn't matter that Sean Cho is battling Crohn's disease and he has had his intestines outside his body. It doesn't matter how you take it. If you digest the cannabis, that's it, and they don't care. So you can appeal and lose and push it back, or you can get it over with. Per the negotiated letter of the law, it seems like a futile appeal. We don't want to waste anyone's time. We want Sean Trell back as soon as possible. That was his statement, which to me had some righteous kind of anger in it. There should be, and it's understandable that this is what was collectively bargained for with the players, but I think it's an oversight that there's no basically ability for anybody to offer mercy and extenuating circumstances. Mandatory sentencing is basically a real problem, period, for a lot of people. Like, it's pretty much shown throughout the actual court system that it doesn't work very well to do and accomplish the things you want, and worse, people like this who have legitimate reasons to sort of be engaged in a particular activity are hurt by it, or at least, you know, people who are, you know, are can be punished, you know, outside, you know, outsized as compared to their crime. So for me, this is a real bothersome, troublesome, terrible thing that the NFL, which I'm sure we've talked about before, has no problem with people taking incredibly dangerous pain medicines like Vicodin and other things, which I'm not really poo-pooing, but I think that there's a really clear risk associated with those types of pain medications, which are, if not worse, no worse than medical marijuana, as far as anybody can tell. And so they have this you know, intersection of culture where it was legal for Chanterelle to be prescribed this and to take this medication, that, you know, that can somehow cost him 4 games in the NFL based on that. Like, that seems ridiculous to me that a doctor can say this is for something that's well documented and incredibly painful, and he has to eat 4 games, and that there's no room for it to be negotiated down. That there's no one with any power that can say that it's not an appropriate punishment for somebody who clearly has suffered and was just looking for a way to alleviate some incredible pain.
Yeah, I think the human element of it is just that. You know, you have to have some regard for him as a person. One thing I did mention to Frank when we were talking is where Chanterelle did err, I feel, is when it's prescribed to you, you let the NFL know, like, listen, yeah, I'm going to take this. And whether he waits for their permission or not and takes it, he's at least like, listen, I'm being honest, I'm being open about this, is a training for Crohn's. Maybe then they say, well, that's still not okay. Then they suspend him for 2 games because at least he was forthcoming with it. So I think that's the one part where Chanterelle did err. But yeah, on the human element, there's, I think the NFL is afraid of this issue because the second they open the door, then it's going to either open the door for all usage, or then they're going to have to pay a lot of attention to regulating this. And that's what they don't want to do because they want to spend their money on other things. So I think that's kind of a lazy man's approach. I think they do need to look more deeply into this issue. I'm not saying you let players get stoned on the field, although I think the Bills may have been today and they should probably drug test all of them. But is a rule suffering from Crohn's disease and, you know, the vivid description that the agent gave there, you have a little bit of leniency in that instance. And so I'd like to see the league be more open with it. And I would like to see, you know, players not be afraid to step up and say, like, yes, I'm doing this and this is why. And then, you know, see where the chips fall from that point on. But generally, I do think he should have informed the league first. But I think the league also needs to, the word is draconian that we see being thrown around, but I do think it's apt in this scenario. The league really needs to reassess some of the draconian policies they have in place here, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think I agree. I mean, ultimately, like, I will leave aside the bigger issue of, you know, marijuana legalization and blah, 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 because it's not related to the podcast, but I think the point is that certainly that the NFL should not be in the business of policing what medications its people can be on, and that, you know, certainly while technically legal to the letter of law, in the sense that it is collectively bargained and the players essentially, I'm sure, decided that they wanted, you know, if you know, whatever, they didn't make it a big enough issue, or their union reps didn't make it a big enough issue, and now that's why it's not in there. So, the league gets what it wants until it's renegotiated. I will say that I do kind of, and so that's why I feel bad saying that there's things Sean Trail could have done to do better, like what Paul said in terms of like notifying the league or the team, you know, that kind of thing, because it kind of makes it seem like it was his fault when, you know, in one sense it is, but in another sense it's the system that's the wrong part. But I would also say that there were better things he could have done in terms of, you know, he could have made this a bigger issue. He could have said, you know, he could have put it on Twitter and said, I was prescribed this by the league. I am not being prohibited to take it because my job says that I can't have medical marijuana as a painkiller, despite a doctor saying so, and started giving interviews and started trying to make a big deal about it.
Right.
Get the rest of the players on his board and try and put some public pressure on the NFL and to change things. And then, so again, maybe he's not that guy. Maybe he doesn't want to do that. That's fine. I hope someone does do it, and I hope that's how this thing can change. But ultimately, you know, as a result, he's not going to be on the team for the next three games. And I hope that he's going healthy for a number of reasons, but I also hope it because we are obviously thin now at tackle. It's debatable whether he would have even come in. Obviously, Kwanjo did a okay job. Hopefully he does better, but this team gets thin pretty quick at tackle if he's not there. So. Anyway, so going on to cuts, which also happened since we last joined you two Thursdays ago, the 53-man roster was announced. There have been a number of additions and subtractions since then. For one, Jordan Gay, who was actually cut before in the 75-man cut down, was actually brought back onto the team and kicked off today.
It's funny. We've been debating Jordan Gay for literally 2 years. We talked about him on the podcast. You know, last time, obviously, because he'd already been cut. Yet every time he plays, I'm like, okay, this is why there's a reason to potentially keep a kickoff specialist on the roster.
And yet it's clear that the Bills are going through the same debate. Otherwise,
right.
This is the second time they've cut him and been like, you know what, bad idea. Come on.
So clearly, Jordan.
And his wife always likes when I tweet about him, so I like when they bring him back. So I'm cool with it.
So Jordan Gay continues to be living in an apartment somewhere in downtown Buffalo on a month-to-month lease with no real sense of security as his life continues. But he's got a job for 1 week, which is more than we can say for some of these people, including, I think, so the big news would be Manny Lawson and Jerome Felton, both projected starters cut. Paul, which one of those do you want to talk about in terms of whether it was a good move at the time, or whether B, you felt the Bills, again, seeing as how we are now in the future and can talk about this, the Bills could have used either one of them today?
Yeah, it's funny that the feelings then versus the feelings then is the week went on versus the feelings today of what happened after the game. Looking on the offensive side of the ball, as pathetic as the offense was, it's tough to look there and say, oh, Jerome Felton would have made a lot of difference as a lead blocker.
Right.
Would have been the playmaking difference. If you can't succeed with McCoy and Sammy Watkins, Charles Clay, Richie Incognito, Eric Wood, three quarters of a Cordy Glenn game, then you're probably, you know, Jerome Felton's not going to be the one to put you over the top. I don't think his lead blocking was missed. Gronkowski wasn't on the field all that much in the role that Felton would have been playing. So, and I think that was just a performance-based issue because, honestly, it didn't save the Bills much on salary. They're eating some dead cap money as it is, and they're just like, whatever. So I'm okay with that one. The Manny Lawson one surprised me based on how thin the defense was. At first, I thought maybe there's more than we realize with this domestic issue and the possible suspensions and the way Rex had his press conference afterwards. That also made me think along those lines. At the same time, if, you know, Rex was being straight and saying, you know, Lamar Alexander earned the starting job and others were better, then maybe that's the case, because honestly, the defense seemed to do fine without Manny Lawson today. I never thought they were missing him. And he was in the last year of his big contract anyway, so just get it off the books as much as you can. And, you know, that's life. So I was, I was good with the move. And at the time, I was shocked, but, you know, thinking, you know, you've got Shaq Lawson out for five more games, and then you got – I made that number up. Who knows how long he's out. Mm-hmm. But you have – I'm okay with both those cuts now, playing Captain Hindsight here.
All right, Frank, do you have any thoughts on –
No, I mean, Paul kind of summed up the thoughts on those players. I think it's exactly right. I was sort of happy with Felton being cut, not because I disliked Jerome Felton, but just because I thought maybe they're going to get away from the idea that they need a lead blocker to push forward for, you know, LeSean McCoy, and they're going to open up the offense a bit. I guess I was wrong. I mean, so
it would,
far.
It would seem that Gronkowski had a much better catching the ball kind of acumen, and that that would be a better way to use him than rather as a lead blocker, which, of course, he never really did, if I recall, in college. I mean, he was a tight end, I think, right? I mean, trying to use him in this kind of quasi-H-back role, but also he's on the roster, I think, listed officially as a fullback, so he's also going to be doing the blocking, so that's how they're going to be using him. Not a good choice, and Felton probably better. Any of these other cuts, Des Lewis, Croy Bierman, Jarrett Boykin, Kane Coulter, LeVar Edwards?
We talked about a lot of these. We predicted a lot of those very well, and I think Des Lewis, they kept him on the practice squad, which is kind of a way of saying, like, we're not in love with you, but maybe, you know, we'll give you another chance to develop here. And
Kind of like a backup girlfriend or something, like, you know, that girl in college where, like, you knew she was kind of into you, but she wasn't that attractive, but, like, you know, it was kind of good to keep in that kind of friend zone in case, you know, this has never happened to me, by the way, because no girls found me attractive in college. But theoretically, that would be something that I could see happening. Movies have indicated these things exist.
Yeah, that sounds like a plot. Yeah, you're right.
I think that's a rom-com waiting to happen. Okay.
Right. So, I think Des Lewis is Matthew McConaughey in this scenario. And no, actually, he'd be the Jennifer Lopez in this scenario. Actually, no, Jennifer Lopez was too pretty.
We need to go back to our famous
value. Oh, Judy Greer. How can I forget about Judy Greer?
Value,
oh, man.
Value over replacement. Hollywood girlfriend.
The 0.0 WAR that is Judy
Greer.
Frank, do you want to explain that? I forget if we've talked about that on the podcast.
I think we have. Like, the idea was that and to be clear, I think Judy Greer was Hollywood zero.
Exactly.
War. The idea was that, you know, we talk about in sports replacement players. Why were we? I don't know that we did talk. We must have talked about this on the podcast, but I'm not sure. Maybe it was before or after a podcast, because it sounds awfully dicey now that I'm thinking about how I'm going to explain it.
Yeah, we're going to explain it to all our
people. Tom or Grant or
But the idea was we needed a
We talked about this on the podcast before.
We'll just put it this way. Yeah. We were having a day where we were being very catty and talking about people's looks, men and women alike, and we were talking about we couldn't really talk about whether somebody was attractive or not unless we had a baseline. And in baseball, there's war where, like, the baseline is a zero war player or a wins above replacement, basically a triple A player that could come up and...
I think we were going VORP, actually. I think that was what we...
Might have been VORP. The point was that we needed somebody who was the baseline by which we could say, you know, this is the... not unattractive person. Judy Greer is an attractive person, particularly, you know, we had her in the Hollywood scale because she's awesome, and we all liked her and think she's great, but we were going to call her, like, the 0 point, and everybody was either going to be more or less attractive than her. And then I forget who the guy was. I think we actually figured out who the guy version of Judy Greer was, too.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I don't remember that. Yeah. But it was like, that was the point at which you could say, okay, you know, that's, you know, negative two Judy Greers or plus two Judy Greers or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was because we were trying, I think our wives were actually asking us, like, the difference between, like, a girl and hot, like, comparing them or one of their friends.
That's right. Our wives were involved. Right.
Yeah, they were there.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so that's what we said, is we can't compare you guys or civilian women just walking around in the street every day to Hollywood women, because it's not the same scale. They have personal trainers. They are, by definition, kind of in the top 10% of the population. So it's kind of not really fair. They have makeup. They're in movies, yada, yada, yada.
People whose professional lives are, their professional lives are involved in, like, how well they look. And I'm sure listeners are so happy.
A Judy Greer is like a plus 8. Judy Greer is like a plus 8, you know, for a civilian, but for Hollywood, she's a 0. She just
not a 0. Well, and again, 0 is not the bottom. 0 is the middle.
0 is the middle. Exactly.
Because there was you could go negative or positive. So 0 was, you know, anyway. Okay. And we never did much with it, and we love everyone, and we definitely were just in a...
We're definitely catty, not sexist.
Right. Yeah, we were just in a very catty, gossipy mood that day, and we were being asked, and so we came up with a scale.
I wonder when we're going to get out of this mood that we've been in for like 4.5 years. we can't seem to break it.
Allow me to give you an AFC East update, listeners.
The Bills could their Bills the Patriots are in the lead, I believe, right?
Are in the lead. They are in the lead with no record.
Yes, by virtue of not having lost yet.
Right. The Dolphins lost, but they only lost by 2 to Seattle. Apparently, Ryan
Tannehill was... 12 to 10. Mario Williams with a sack. That Dolphins D looked pretty good in that game.
Okay. And the Jets also lost by 1 point. Now, how bad... Now, if the Patriots win, like, suicide watch for the entire AFC East, right? Like, they're a game in the hole without
Tom
Brady.
9.5 point underdog. Lowest right. I think 15 years, they said.
If they lose... Everyone will feel a little better, but everyone will also feel like, what a wasted opportunity.
What have we done?
To not capitalize on picking up on a game on New England. So no matter what happens in this game, you're not going to – the loss across the board, it's either like we're all 0-1 and that's like, okay, I guess we can just sort of deal with that. Or you're a game behind – everybody's a game behind New England without Tom Brady.
It's very –
There's no nice way to look at this. It's just – terrible all around.
Yes, I agree.
I believe there's a song that goes, "Son of a bitch, get me a drink." I think that's largely where we are.
Yes, fair.
And speaking of drinking, something we'll all be doing on Thursday as we watch what promises to be. And that's the other thing is, I will say the one bright spot is it is the as we've said it is the first game. If we win the next two games, I'm perfectly happy with the first quarter of the season, regardless of whether or not we beat the Jets. I think we needed to get 2-2 in this first four games, and that's very achievable because the Jets, as we have previously noted, lost today to the Bengals. The Bills will be 2.5-point favorites at home. The big home opener, Thursday night game.
I wonder if that'll move.
This number.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure it could move. I mean, honestly, neither team looked – I mean, the Jets probably looked a little bit better against theoretically better competition as the Bengals, but obviously, again, this is a whole new season.
Right.
That's probably going all off of what the last year's teams looked like. The Jets, of course, lost to the Bills twice last year, including a heartbreaking loss for the Jets fans. Mm. Hilarious and fun win for the Bills.
A heartwarming win for the Bills.
The Bills as we headed off into the offseason by ruining the Jets' playoff hopes at home last year. Or, well, we played, I don't know where. But anyway, so why don't we start with Paul? Paul, what do you think about this Friday night's this Thursday night's game and the Bills' chances?
Yeah, this is going to be a the chances are good. That's my deep insight into this matter. I mean, I don't think much has really changed with the Jets since the end of last season, which is both a good thing because the Bills beat them twice and a bad thing because the Jets won 10 games last year, so they obviously have a plan that works. It's not like the Bills blew them out twice. Both of those were nail-biting types of games. So on the downside, well, I think the Bills have a good chance at this and are favored justly. I don't think it's a slam dunk as much as it might be tempting to consider it as such. The Jets played well defensively today. Their offense is what it is and always will be. It is a short week. The Jets have lost 5 in a row to Buffalo. They are definitely wanting to get back at Rex Ryan after he cost them the playoffs last year. Not individually, of course. I understand the concept of team play, but it was one of those where the Jets are going to be highly motivated. So it's just a difficult game for me to pick because the pessimist in me wants to be like, they disappoint today. I already picked them to win once. I mean, if I pick them to win again and they lose, then I'm going to feel like a jerk. Like, oh, yeah, there's that guy who's overly optimistic about the Bills and doesn't, understand realistically what this team is. At the same time, I don't want to be so engrossed in pessimism after a loss today that I automatically pick them to lose. And I can't pick a tie because that's always been my cop-out in this scenario. So I'm just going to take emotions out of play here. I mean, I just look at the teams and say it's a short week and going on the road is always tough. And by that logic, I am going to pick the Bills in this one. I think it's going to be a nail biter. I think they win it 3-2.
Man.
I think 3-2 is what I'm going to go with.
Low scoring game. Okay.
Low scoring game.
Just an update for Frank and Paul, you can feel free to change your opinion after me giving you this information. Uh-oh. Andy Dalton today, 23 of 30 for 366 yards, one touchdown and one interception, but was sacked 7 times for 42 yards.
Can Tyrod throw as well as Dalton did? Because he's going to get, and who knows with Cordy Glenn on a short week. If Cordy's not recovered and you got Cyrus Kwanjo in there. And again, Cyrus did okay today in a stand-up role. That's going to be a possibility for problems there.
Yeah, definitely. Mm.
My turn. I think if the Bills lose this game, I think the season's over. I'm sorry, I really do. You dug a huge hole, and you're never going to catch up, and you're going to be in the hunt. And I know that's a terrible thing to say after week two. But
so you're firing Rex Friday, then, if they lose.
I think the season's over, and I don't know if I'm firing Rex yet, just because why would, like, it's not going to get better, right? Like, it's just over. So I'd have to think about firing him Friday. I don't know if I would do it Friday. But
we'll
talk
about that on Friday.
We'll talk about it on the next weekend. We might be having a very interesting conversation. I do, though. I think if you lose to the Jets and the Ravens back-to-back, particularly if the offense looks the way it did today, I don't think any amount of good defense is going to help you dig out of an 0-2 hole. In the AFC, I don't think it's going to – you're going to have lost to two AFC teams. I don't think you're going to catch a wild card or anything. I think you're done. It would take a lot, and I don't think the Bills would have – I would have nothing to hang my hat on that the Bills would have a lot in it. And as such, I can't bring myself psychologically to pick the Bills losing this game because I can't pick them – I can't pick the season to be over in week two. I can't. And there are reasons to think that they might win. Their defense looked pretty good. Again, we don't know how well the Ravens are, but whatever. The Jets are turnover machines. They might very well turn it over. I think they need to score points. I think they need to score more than 3 points Paul's suggesting, and I think they need to score more than the 7 points that they did this week. And I think they probably need to score more than the 14 points that would have won today's football game. They're going to need 20 points. But I think they can get 20 points. I think they can win this football game 20-16. I think that's what I'll pick. That's what I'm going to hope for, that they can beat the Jets. But, you know, it's not going to be easy. The Jets can score points. The Jets, as Paul said, like, they're probably angry. I don't know if I believe in things like being due with these types of deals, but I think the Jets and Bills are more evenly matched than, say, the Bills and the Patriots. So, I think that there is a bit of odds that are just, you know, you're going to only get heads so many times flipped in a row. So that definitely could happen this week, too. But I'm going to pick the Bills 20-16, basically, so I don't cry myself to sleep tonight.
All right, then. I think I am going to pick us to win, though I don't feel great about it. I don't think Frank does either, clearly.
Yeah,
I don't either.
Is not exactly
a strong vote of confidence. I do think that the Jets do have problems. I think, A.J. Green had a really good game today, so maybe Darrell Revis is kind of beginning to slide, and now is the time that Sammy Watkins, who already kind of did pretty well against him last week, can continue to do well for a whole game. Or not last week, last year. Can do well for a whole game, and that will be enough to get us over the hump. But I do think this is going to be a little more defensive. I could see this definitely being a field goal kicking contest, in which case I have... That does not make me feel particularly good. Nick Folk, okay for the Jets, 3-for-4 today, and 1-for-2 on extra points, which probably come back to haunt them. But anyway, so let's hope that that's the case. And I'll say the Bills win 20-13.
How come we didn't get music to preview our predictions?
Sorry, that was my cell phone. Okay. I thought it was off.
I thought Scott was trying to hype up his own pick and take attention away from ours.
Exactly. So. Yeah.
That's exactly what it was, actually.
FX people. Yeah, I was the one who called.
Yep.
Anyway, Paul, do you have any final Twitter thoughts that you want to share from today's events?
Yeah, I'll do it. First, I want to give a quick 15-second Twitter roll call because there's a lot today. Frank, of course, thank you for your participation. Jake Rouge, Grant, long time listener, appreciate his comments when he jumped in. He kind of asked in the second half, which we should have done. Ryan, I had every intent to answer all the questions you had at the end of that game, but running long, so I'm not going to. Meredith Gay, we mentioned, Jordan Gay's wife. Adam, Phil, James, always great to hear from James. Orlando, of course, is always very involved. It's great to go back and forth with him on Rex Ryan. Jasmine Jeter, David Furster, Brian Punt, Reza, all the usual suspects, Big Dicks. Thank you, Big Dicks. Always great to hear from you too. I wish I was making that up. But it's, thank you to everyone on Twitter. Tom jumped in at the end. So it's good to hear from Tom too. So
you realize I'm gonna cut out just an audio sample of you saying thank you, big dicks.
Yes, that's what I'm gonna be known for.
Yeah, play that without context forever.
Thank you, big dicks.
Okay.
that's how I should end all the times I lead.
Yeah.
Thank you, big dicks. So yeah, no, I have no other thoughts on the Twitter. We went through a lot of these. As I look over the things I said, there's nothing I have to add to it. It was a very dull game that I don't want to speak about anymore. And let's hope Thursday ends up being more enjoyable.
Agreed. And so with our new format, everyone, we will be continuing to tape late Sundays after the game, presumably. Obviously, for this Thursday's game, it'll be a little different, so we'll have a little more time to get questions in. But we will try and leave a Facebook post on Sunday for anyone who wants to chime in on Facebook. And then if I'm looking at Facebook during the game, I will try and respond to you then. And if not, then we will certainly get to it in the podcast. That Facebook page is, of course, facebook.com/bbillsmny. Mm-hmm. And you can obviously, Paul is usually live tweeting the games, mm-hmm. And he is tweeting at bbillsmny as well. You can email us at bbillsmny@gmail.com. But don't, because we never check it.
Yeah, that's true. I'm going to check it right now, actually.
You have been served.
What?
Email from Rex Ryan, what?
Hey, I'd love to come on the show. But
there's this Nigerian prince. He's a big man, but he's having trouble. Right.
Just set the forward from Rex. That's
right, that's, yeah.
And then, let's see. You can download us on iTunes. You can Google us and just put in BBillsMNY or Buffalo Bills Podcast. We're usually on the first page. Otherwise, enjoy your week. Enjoy the short rest. We will talk to you soon. The Bills play this Thursday night against the Jets, and I hope everyone's watching. And boo, the Jets suck. Paul, can we get a thank you, big dicks, before we go?
Or thank whatever? You, big dicks.
Exactly. thanks, everyone. My name is Scott.
I'm Paul.
I'm Frank.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.